We're back on Canuck Central. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the Kintech studio. This hour of Canuck Central is brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. A fast lunch doesn't have to mean fast food. Satisfy your midday cravings by choosing a main side and drink for only $15, served in 20 minutes or less. Let's bring in our next guest, covering the Tampa Bay Lightning for LightningInsider.com. It is Eric Erlandson. Thanks for this, Eric. How are you?
I'm good, gentlemen. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate the time.
Yeah, thanks for making time for us. It's kind of a quick end to this Lightning season that I know here on this show we were really impressed with how the Lightning started to turn things around. It felt like they were getting a little bit stale, and then moving on from Stamkos, getting Gensel in, and some of the other shrewd moves they made, it looked like this was a team to really be reckoned with going into the playoffs. But the Florida Panthers, just a juggernaut that they weren't quite ready for.
Yeah, they thought they knew the Panthers, but they didn't know these Panthers, right? Because
yeah.
The addition of Marchand and the emergence of Lundell and Lou Ostarainen and guys like that, some of the younger players are really starting to elevate their game. But their third line that they had in this series, anchored by Marchand, they were the difference. We always talk about sometimes how stars cancel each other out, and the third line can make a difference. This Lightning certainly know that with the Gord, Goodrow, and Coleman line when they were winning cups, and that was the difference in this series was that line. They were so dominant when they were on the ice, and that's the depth. I mean, it's hard to find that kind of depth in the salary cap world, right? Florida's got it, and I think there's a reason many people believed whoever came out of this series might come out of the Eastern Conference. That's just how good these two teams were, even though it doesn't show it with Florida winning this in five games.
I mean, the Panthers are probably not building a team as good as this if they did not have to face the Lightning all those years.
Sorry, say that again?
I said the Panthers probably wouldn't build a team as good as this if they didn't have to face the Lightning for all those years, right? I mean, this is what drove them to build this team.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they had some of the foundation, right? They had the Barkov and they had the Ekblad and they brought in Bobrovsky and, so they had those elements, but they've done a good job of drafting and bringing in free agents. I mean, the Tkachuk trade is going to go down as one of the better trades, to kind of change things around because, those 2 years that the Lightning beat them in the playoffs, what would they kind of thought that they were missing? They thought they were missing some grit, right? Well, they make that Tkachuk trade. They move out Uyghur, they move out Huberdeau, who are great players. But Tkachuk has that skill, but he also has that other element to him. I mean, you saw it. He's not 100% healthy. He does not look as effective as we know he can be, but he still made a way, to put his stamp on this series with the two goals in game one, the hit on Jay Gensel at the end of game three. I mean, he just found a way to, push himself into this, and he just brings an attitude to that team. And you're right. If it wasn't for the Lightning beating them those couple of years, they probably wouldn't have had to, make that kind of change on their roster, and it's certainly paying dividends.
I think the big question a lot of people in the hockey world are asking right now is, what's happening with John Cooper in the Tampa Bay Lightning? Is there any smoke to these rumors that he might be on the hot seat?
Well, I don't know if it's on the hot seat, and I don't know if this would be the organization moving on from him as much as it would be from him moving on from the organization. I mean, we know it. The NHL, what's the shelf life for an average coach? 2.5, 3 years? He's been here for over a decade, and that's a long time for NHL coaching. He's had success. I think that the way that the team in particular this year responded, especially you start to look at their defensive numbers. I mean, they were 23rd, 24th in the league last year in defense, and this year they were a top five team by the end of the regular season. Their 5-on-5 numbers were so much better. They weren't so reliant on their power play. So, it's not that he's not being effective, and they've lost in the first round in three straight years, but, it was a toss-up 2 years ago against Toronto. The Leafs ended up winning three of those games in overtime. Last year Florida was clearly the better team, but this year could have went either way. It ended up being five games. We'll find out. I mean, the team's holding their exit interviews tomorrow. I anticipate he'll be back for next season, but you never know. You never know what's going through organization's mind, a coach's mind, anything like that. But he is the head coach of Team Canada next year and, you know, for the Olympics. So we'll see if that has any influence over anything either. So it's something definitely worth keeping an eye on here over the next couple of days.
Yeah, it's going to be really fascinating to see how it works out. I mean, you're very close to the team. Have you seen any signs of, I wouldn't say players tuning him out because it's clearly not the case, but that it's getting towards the end at all? Because you seem, you know, to be under the understanding that he's going to be back.
Yeah, like I said, you know, you look at how, with the changes that came in, I mean, there was a ton of changes. Obviously, you move out, you move on from an icon like Steven Stamkos and you trade a Mikhail Sergachev. Those are two big name players that help you win cups. And, you know, you bring in a Gensel, you add a Connor Geeky, a 20-year-old high-end prospect, top 10 pick from Arizona a couple years ago, and you bring in a J.J. Moser. I mean, there was a lot of different players. Bring back Ryan McDonagh after 2 years away from the team, and it took a little bit for them to kind of find their identity this year. But once they found it, they responded, right? The February they had, they really were in lockdown mode. They committed themselves to playing defense. I mean, those are signs that a team is listening to their head coach. So I've not sensed anything that the players are tuning them out in any way. And the message is not getting stale. Sometimes you worry, you know, if that's the case. I think the message has been fresh with some of the changes that they've made. I mean, Brandon Hagel's been, you know, kind of risen up the leadership ranks in that locker room. And, you know, he's so open to, you know, anything that the coaching staff is trying to implement and everything else. I mean, I don't get the sense that there's any issue in terms of player coach player and the way that they respond to each other.
I guess the question for the Lightning, I mean, Hedman's still been pretty great, you know, with the season he just had, and McDonagh was a nice pickup for them last off season, but it kind of feels like they're 1D short to really play with some of the heavy hitters in the Eastern Conference and the rest of the league.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I've said it throughout the good portions of the year that I like their top four, right? I like Moser playing on his offside with Victor Hedman and the pair of McDonagh and Chernak are just like they were, you know, when they were shut down pair a couple of years ago for this team winning cups. And, you know, but you wondered if there was a weakness, if there was something that could be exposed, it might be on the bottom pair. And they ran 11-7 for a good portion of the season and certainly a good portion of the series with Darren Radish, Emil Lilleberg and Nick Perbix. But you felt that if there was an area that could be exposed, it would be that. So, yeah, I would agree that they're probably a defenseman away. And they don't have a lot of contracts to hit this year. Perbix will be a UFA. I'm not sure if he's going to end up being back. Yanni Gourde is a UFA. You know, so they don't have a lot of contracts. They have to worry about re-signing players, and the cap's going to go up a little bit. So, you know, that could maybe help him kind of solve that in the offseason, because I think you're right. I think they just need that good number five type defenseman that can step up in a top four role if you need it, but to kind of solidify the bottom pairing.
Well, and obviously there has been quite a bit of change with a new ownership group coming in as well. So does that impact things at all moving forward, or is the organization still committed completely to spending to the cap and this whole idea of excellence?
I think they're still committed. Jeff Zinnick is going to be still around for, I think, 5 years. I think he's basically going to be, you know, the face of the ownership group and in charge of a lot of things. So I think that commitment is still going to be there because, I mean, you look at it, the core of this team, right? It's Victor Hedman, it's Nikita Kucherov, it's Andrei Vasilevskiy, Braden Point, Anthony Cirelli, Brandon Hagel. I mean, this is still a very talented core that's not, you know, they're not to their mid-30s yet. So it's not this aging core at the same time. Vasilevsky's 30, Kucherov's 30. I think McDonagh might be the oldest at 33, 34. Hedman's 32, somewhere in that range. But the Hagels, you know, he's 26 years old. And, some of these other guys, Geeky, I just mentioned 20, they have a good, still solid young core. So I think there should be a commitment to that, right? This is still a team whose window is not yet closed. It's going to close eventually. And certainly the cap has kind of, you know, constrained them a little bit over the last couple of years in trying to bring in some of the depth they lost because of the flat cap. But now that it's going up, I think that the commitment will still be there to try and make this team as competitive as possible and kind of keep this window open for some of these, you know, Hall of Fame caliber players who are still here with the team, still playing at a high level.
Yeah, there's no questions about Kucherov and Braden Point. And Cirelli had a big year, and Man, that Jake Guentzel find, I mean, Sat and I on this show, you know, thinking back to the Four Nations final, like Jake Guentzel was just all over the place for Team USA. We were really hoping, we know the Canucks were in on him last summer, and obviously he ends up there in Tampa Bay. Just what an incredible player, and you know, it's kind of nice for him too. I guess he gets to prove that he's not just a product of Sidney Crosby.
Yeah, you know what? He is such a smart player. Like, he's never going to dazzle you. Right, he's not the fastest skater. He's not a big guy. He just knows how to play with high end players, right? And obviously with Sid for all those years, he's exceptional talent in the way that he thinks the game. But that allowed him to fit right in with Nikita Kucherov, because Nikita Kucherov thinks the game at a different level than anybody else. I mean, you talk to anybody that's ever played with Kuch, they figure out pretty quickly that you better be ready for anything that Nikita Kucherov could do. And with the way that Guentzel plays, and you look at most of his goals, they're usually scored somewhere around the paint, right? Below the hash marks, off to the side. He just finds soft spots and understands how to get there and kind of open up some space for him to be ready for anything. And, you know, he can read off Nikita Kucherov, and, you know, he's a really good two-way forward as well. You know, that's the one thing as the season has gone on, anytime you ask anybody about Jake Guentzel fitting in, that's they rave about how he thinks the game. And he's a great fit. I mean, he's a great fit for this team.
Yeah, he's a real intelligent hockey player, and it's nice seeing him play with some talented players and have success. If it wasn't going to be here in Vancouver, obviously. But you mentioned Nikita Kucherov, incredible year again, 121 points. Do you think he deserved more consideration for the Hart Trophy? We'll see if he's a finalist here or not. But he put together a real great season. I know they lost in the first round, but he was as good as anybody this year, I thought.
Yeah, then there wasn't really any clear-cut favorites this year, right? Last year was kind of a two-horse race in a lot of ways. Last year was probably the year. You look at his numbers last year, he was in on 50% of the scoring for a team that finished, I think, fifth or sixth in the league in goals, and he was in on 50% of them, and 100 assists, and, I mean, the crazy numbers he put up last year, and, you know, not as crazy this year, but still as effective. Given the field, if I had a vote this year, I probably would have put him at the top, because he just continues to produce. And, you know, you take away his main, we'll call it weapon, and Steven Stamkos on the power play, and he still led the league in power play points, right? So he wasn't reliant on Stammer kind of having that one-timer over there on the power play. So an incredible player, a player who he doesn't dazzle you at high speed. He dazzles you when you slow the game down and go back and look at it, because you can't believe some of the things that he pulls off. And that's what makes Nikita Kucherov the player that he is, because it's a subtle greatness to his game. And, you know, we'll see what the voting looks like. It feels like there's a lot of support for Connor Hellebuyck this year, based on what he's done. And, I didn't think he had a Carey Price type of season to kind of be at the forefront of the MVP race, but he had a great year. Wide open race this year. I know that the three finalists, are who they are. So we'll see where it goes. But, yeah, I mean, Kucherov deserves certainly the attention for it.
He is Eric Erlandson. You can follow him on Twitter at Eric_Erlandson. He is the Lightning Insider, and you can follow his great work at lightninginsider.com. Thanks so much for this, Eric.
Hey, I appreciate it. Be in touch.
There he is, Eric Erlandson, joining us as he covers the Tampa Bay Lightning. And you heard it there. He doesn't expect to change for John Cooper and the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Yeah, and he's locked in there too, so he'd know. Now, obviously, these things can change, because very different, obviously, tenure-wise, like five times the tenure. But the feel around Rick Tocchet heading into the end of the season, at least around the team, was, hey, he's going to come back. And then he didn't. Like, does that reflection, when you take that beat, you know, really drive it home? Because that's kind of what, you know, we got the sense we got from Rutherford when he spoke the other day, right? That the conversations that he had been having with Tocchet all indicated he's coming back.
Yeah.
But he hadn't yet signed.
Yeah.
And then eventually just says no. But they all were under the impression he was coming back.
It's going to be an interesting one with Cooper. And, you know, you'd be foolish to think that the vast amount of vacancies didn't play a part in Rick Tocchet's decision to decide thanks but no thanks with the Vancouver Canucks. And I wonder if that's something, because, as Eric mentioned there, maybe it's not the Lightning saying goodbye to John Cooper, but John Cooper saying goodbye to the Lightning. And, you know, it would be tough because Tampa is still very much in a contending window. Yeah. Like, yeah, they lost to the Florida Panthers, but and they only lost in five games, and they were by far the second-best team on the ice in that series. But I don't think anybody's beating Florida. Like, you telling me the winner of this Toronto-Ottawa series is going to go to the Florida Panthers and beat them?
I don't think any of this team is beating them. It's interesting. So the betting odds have the Canes. Some have the Canes as favored to win the East. It's got to be the analytics thing.
Yeah.
But I'm not picking against the Panthers.
The Panthers look unbelievable.
I already picked.
Like, Brad Marchand on their third line? This is not fair.
No, I mean, it's...
They built this team in NHL 25 with, like, trade freeze off or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I can force through trades. Like, let me just have whatever I want.
Yeah. And I mean, Seth Jones just looks so much better not having to play 26 minutes a night in every situation. He could play with good players and wouldn't say be sheltered, but be asked to do what he's capable of doing. And he looks far better.
Yeah. I mean, it helps when you have other good players to play with, right?
100%. But like,
you spend less time in your defensive zone.
That was my one concern with them was, okay, last year you had, what's his name that ended up with the Seattle Kraken, the defenseman?
Montour.
Brandon Montour. I don't know why I blanked on Montour, but Brandon Montour, he was such a big part of their defense, and they lost him this past year, right? And they signed guys like Nate Schmidt, they lost OEL, but they didn't replace them with like big, meaningful players. And now they found that guy in Seth Jones. Plus, you got Brad Marchand.
Yeah. The Brad Marchand one, just
that, you see the he set up was a third goal that he set up the other night.
Yeah,
just incredible.
I mean, it's unfair. Like, you have Barkov and Tkachuk, and they barely had Ekblad in the series. If they get Ekblad back, you know, he becomes their third or fourth bet. Like, you know, your top four defensemen are about as good as there is in the league. So, on top of that, you're already loaded up front. They've got a lot of very efficient contracts. So the most inefficient contract that they have on their books and Sergei Bobrovsky doesn't look so bad because the rest of the roster just falls in line so well. It's an impressive team. And that's the one thing. It's like, you feel disappointed if you're the Lightning, but it's kind of similar to the Washington Capitals all those years ago. Like, every time they would go to Crosby's house and lose, and it's just like, well, you know, you're going up against Crosby and Malkin. You know, they're like, there's a reason you're coming up second best in all of these heavyweight fights, right? You know, you can only do so much against some of the best there is, and I don't really have too many doubts saying that Florida is probably the team coming out of the East with the way they look right now, fully healthy.
No, and if the Leafs are going to have trouble filling out a lineup card, it's going to make it very difficult.
Josh, have you figured out what happened here while we're...
Yeah, so...
Will Nylander's sick or injured?
William Nylander is playing.
Okay, he's in the lineup, but he was not on the initial lineup card?
They accidentally put his brother, Alex Nylander, on the lineup card.
They were able to fix it in time?
Yes. There were questions about whether or not he would play, I guess, because of that.
Okay.
But he is playing.
I see the outrage on social media. Was that completely factual?
Because we're doing the show, and I'm like seeing this start to pop up on Twitter, like, wait, Alex Nylander is in the Leafs lineup.
Yeah, and it's hard to, you know.
It's the wrong Nylander. How did you write the wrong Nylander on the card?
Yeah, believe it or not, it's difficult sometimes to actually watch a game and figure out what's going on while you're talking live on air and conducting an interview, but.
I was like, so is Nylander playing? I'm really confused right now.
I reached out the message and I was like, wait, what?
Leafs are up 1-0 goal from Austin Matthews trying to make up for his Game 5 performance where he was just absolutely brutal for the Maple Leafs. The Golden Knights also with an early 1-0 lead on the Minnesota Wild as well. So both teams that are ahead in the series 3-2 in these Game 6s are ahead in their respective games. And for the Leafs, I mean, you definitely don't want to go back to Toronto for Game 7.
No. I mean, that's when you know, the intrusive thoughts start winning.
If they haven't already got there, right? Because they haven't looked all that great in this game so far. The one that has been interesting is Vegas, because Minnesota's looked so good in that series. And the fastball that Kaprizov and Boldy have, like, Vegas just doesn't have anything to match it.
No, they have the best line in the series.
They might have maybe the best line in the league with the way that Kaprizov has played this year.
Yeah, I mean,
close to it.
Yeah, I mean, that's how good Kaprizov is, right? Yeah. I mean, you can make the case for it. But anytime you have the most dynamic player in a series,
yeah,
you have a chance. And right now, like, they have a chance. Mm. I still think Vegas wins.
Yeah.
They're ultimately too good, but it's impressive. It really is impressive. And you know how Quinn Hughes doesn't want to stay in Vancouver potentially? You know, I'm hoping that same misery for Minnesota, and perhaps the Canucks can be a team that scoops up a superstar.
A couple other game sixes coming up. He's what, a year away from unrestricted?
They're going to have to make a decision with him pretty soon, too.
Yeah. Like, if he says he's not willing to resign come July 1,
yeah.
Kaprizov's probably on the trade.
And I'm sure he says
summer.
Vancouver's number one on his list.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Of all the teams.
He's a big Canucks fan.
That's what everybody says, right? Yeah. And if there's one place I want to play, it's Vancouver.
Yeah. Vancouver is that's where I want to be in Russian.
Yeah.
I always wanted to follow in the footsteps of one Pavel Bure. So.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And maybe he was a Bure fan.
It's possible.
Inspiration.
I might just want to go to Florida. Mm. And be like, you know what? I'm going to take $9 million to go to Florida.
Just skip
that?
Just skip the Vancouver step. Just go straight to Florida.
Huge Artem Chubarov fan. Massive.
Massive. Well, I think his car is still parked in Rogers Arena. Yeah.
Fedorov, too. You know, another great Russian of Canucks lore.
Yeah, Fedorov. I mean, his claim to fame as a Canucks getting knocked out by Kevin Bieksa at rookie camp.
Yeah.
Or training camp, whatever it was.
The other games going on tonight, Stars, Avalanche, Kings, Oilers. Oilers have the Kings on the brink. Avs are trying to stave off elimination at the hands of the Dallas Stars. We will continue to keep an eye on the Stanley Cup playoffs. Coming up next, Landon Ferraro is going to join us. His take on Tockett's departure and more. That's coming up next on Canuck Central.
Discussing the biggest stories that matter to Vancouver sports fans. Halford and Brough in the morning. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm going to make you an offer you can't refuse.
I'm really disappointed in my Marlon Brando, if I'm honest. It's gotten worse over the years.
It used to be better?
Yeah. Maybe I just haven't watched Godfather recently enough.
So is that your plan now?
The good news is, with the Canucks' early exit, we have a long summer ahead of us.
Well, once you get through the first round of the playoffs, you don't have like four games every night, like you're going to have a bit more time.
Let's bring in our next guest. It is hour number two here in the Kintech studio. It's Landon Ferraro, Canucks analyst, joining us here on Canucks Central. He's still been very busy calling some of the Abbotsford Canucks playoff games. What's happening, Landon?
Oh, not too much. Just enjoying the sunshine in Vancouver for a change. Nice.
Yeah, I know the team hasn't given us a lot of sunshine and rainbows to really gloss over the last couple of weeks, but at least summer is around the corner and the weather is picking up, and more golfing is ahead for the summer. All right, the big news of the week, Rick Tockett decides he is not going to remain on as Canucks head coach. What is your immediate reaction to the now vacant head coaching position?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little surprised for sure. I really thought he was going to be back. Exit meetings, and they said he'll have an answer by, you know, I think it was, they said Wednesday or, you know, the end of the week, and then it slipped past that. I mean, you start to think, okay, this, you know, I remember talking to you guys, you know, a month ago or whatever it was, and saying, like, well, they've known each other, like Rutherford, they've known each other forever, and you know, they're not going to want to drag this out. Like, this will be done really quick. And as soon as it wasn't, that just, it just didn't look right to me. And he makes the decision the other day. And, you know, like, as a surprise, like, you know, I kind of see it as well.
Well, like, as in, like, from his perspective?
Yeah, just, I mean, not to say I know what's going on, but at the same time, like, you know, we talk about all that the Canucks had to go through this year, and, you know, but we always talk about the players, and, you know, when you're a player and you got this going on, you're involved in, you know, call it 10% of everything that's going on. When you're the coach, like, you're dealing with all of it. And, you know, like, I think anyone, like, that's a long, hard year. And I think it might have just been a bit of a, you know, I just need to move on and have a reset.
Landon, we're just we're gonna reconnect. Your line's cutting out a little bit, so we're gonna try and reconnect on a better, more connected line. An update from Ottawa, William Nylander, who was not on the initial lineup card, has just scored for the Maple Leafs to make it 2-0.
Yeah, great goal by Alex Nylander.
One of the Nylanders has scored tonight. This hour of Canuck Central is brought to you by BC Liquor. Until May 31st, save $3 on Vintage Inc. Whiskey Barrel Aged Red and $5 off Empress 1908 Gin. Visit your nearest BC Liquor location today and enjoy responsibly. We'll get Landon back on the line here in a moment.
Well, it's one of those things, like the playoffs, and especially watching NHL and NBA, like every night there's so much to do. I've been wanting to go watch the movie Sinners.
Yeah.
And I just can't go during the week.
Well, you'll have time.
Eventually.
Yeah. All right, let's bring Landon back into the conversation. And, you know, you mentioned with Tocchet, and you know, now the vacancy is there. I know you've been covering some of these Abbotsford games. What's impressed you about Manny Malhotra? And, you know, he's obviously going to be a candidate, as Jim Rutherford alluded to in his news conference the other day. But what's really impressed you about Manny Malhotra, and whether or not you think he might be ready for that kind of a promotion already after just 1 year coaching in the A?
Yeah, I mean, I think for a lot of guys, I would be a little more concerned about making the jump that quick. Like, it's, you know, that's especially in this market, like a Canadian market that's passionate. Like, that's a big responsibility to get thrown on your plate that early. But, you know, just knowing Manny a little bit and, you know, training with him and skating with him when I was first turning pro and he was towards the end of his career, and seeing how his brain works and how he thought about the game and how passionate he was. Like, he's someone to me that he brings all of that to coaching now. And the other side of it, or the other part of it, is his passion to help younger players grow and, you know, kind of realize their dream of making the NHL. That's why I think he had, you know, done it such a good job in Abbotsford, is like, he truly cares about his players and he, you know, he's never going to be, you know, in the conversation of, you know, I just don't know if that guy puts in enough work. Like, Manny, Manny cares about this game and respects it so much. Like, he puts the work in, and then on top of that, he's a really good communicator. So, you know, you throw all that in together, and, you know, it's someone that I think could handle that this early. And then on top of that, you just bring in some good assistants that, you know, have been around before and can help him along.
I think that's going to be the question, right? It's like, is he ready for this job, or are you doing it too soon? And I think the things you mentioned about him and having that staff, and the fact that if you believe in the guy, then maybe doing it too soon is better than waiting. It's better maybe to get the right guy too soon than make the choice for the wrong guy, so to speak, right? Like, if they really believe he has what it takes, then you may as well start that process early.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's interesting as well of, like, you look at, as of right now, the coaches that are out there, and, you know, you look at that list, and are there any that instantly jump off the paper for you?
Well, not the ones that are, like, in the pay grade, right? Like, Sullivan's going to get, whatever, $7 million, and he's going to New York, and, I mean, and outside of that, like, you go through a list of names, and they don't really make sense, right?
Yeah, like, you know, going through it, you know, I don't really see a name that I'm instantly like, well, I know he would do a way better job than Manny. And I'm not sitting here saying that he should have the job, but I'm just saying that with what's out there right now, like, I don't see why he wouldn't be right on par with a lot of those guys and be heavily considered, especially with how well he knows the organization. He was here before. Not that there's a lot of guys around from when he was coaching and helping out. Like, you know, I remember him being on the ice when I had my PTO here in 2019, I think it was. So, you know, like, he knows the organization as a player from the coaching staff side, from the Abbotsford side. Like, he's more well-versed in the organization than probably half the people that are working in it right now, right? So it does make sense in a lot of ways.
Well, I think he has an understanding of the way the front office probably wants the team to play or expects the team to play. And you know, they've brought in a lot of guys to play that kind of hockey over the last couple of years. And sure, there's going to be changes over the course of the summer. There's changes every summer. But you know, I think a lot of the guys, like we've talked about, you know, they need impact players at the top of the lineup. A lot of the middle six, bottom six type forwards, those are already figured out. The D's mostly figured out. So the team's already kind of built to play the way that Manny has been trying to coach this Abbotsford team.
Yeah, they just like all good organizations, like you want to make sure that your NHL team and your American League team are playing as similar styles as possible so that when you have call-ups and everything like that, then the guys can jump in as seamlessly as possible. So, you know, he already has that blueprint, but, you know, especially watching team 1-3 going down and those in Abbotsford to the last series, like, from where that team was at the beginning of the season when I did a few games and to where they were in playoffs, like the pace that they played with, especially through the neutral zone, but they still were very sound defensively. They weren't taking unnecessary risks. They just really understood, especially Victor Mancini down there. Like, I mean, he was making plays on the defensive side of the puck at his goal line and then seeing the opportunity and jumping up and being, whether it's the third or fourth guy in the rush, like, everything that the Canucks were talking about in training camp of how they wanted their team to play and open up a little better of their rush game, well, Abbotsford already kind of does that. Like, they figured it out and were able to implement it with the players there. So, again, like, he has the blueprint. He understands how the organization wants to play. Like, it seems like the easiest transition if it gets to that point.
Yeah, it's the plug-and-play aspect, right? And if you want to move on with your offseason and feel good about having alignment and understanding of what's going on in the organization, it's the easiest move to make, but it might also be the best move for the team when you consider the options available. I think the question would be, would Manny be ready to take this leap? I mean, I know you can't speak for him, but that would be my question. Is he the type of guy that would feel like he would still needs a bit more seasoning before taking the opportunity? I know there's only 32 of these jobs, but sometimes guys say, like, I'm not ready to take that leap yet, right?
Yeah, and I don't know. Like you said, like, I can't speak for him, but I can just say my impression of him and what I think. And with the right, surrounding him with the right people, insulating him so that, you know, when different scenarios pop up, you know, there's someone that's already been through it and can already kind of help them along the way and show them how, okay, this is what I did, you know, 10 years ago, and this is the result. So, you know, we can look at that, maybe try and improve on it, all that, all those things. But the other side, I think, too, is with the season the Canucks just had, like, making the easiest transition might be the best thing moving forward anyway. Like, the less that the guys, there's already a massive shakeup from all the moves they had to make, and now obviously with Tockett leaving, the new coach coming in, if you can soften that a little bit, maybe it gets them out of the gate a little bit quicker. They don't have as much feeling out process at the beginning of the season in training camp as well.
So part of the concern from a lot of listeners and those around the Canucks, those following the Canucks of Tockett's departure is, it's not so much Tockett himself, but it's what it says about where the team is headed, and it raises red flags like, well, does this mean Quinn Hughes has one foot out the door? And ultimately, none of us know the answer to that. Quinn Hughes probably doesn't even know the ultimate answer to that yet himself, because he's still a year away from really having to make that decision. But do the Canucks just seem like a team to you that's just in a position where they're kind of in the murky middle? They're not all that bad, but they're not really quite close enough to contention to really be a destination type team either.
Yeah, I would say that's a pretty good idea of where they're at right now. I think this summer is, you know, not that this is groundbreaking, but this is a massive summer, and I think this really decides what path they're going to end up going down of summer shakes out and the players that they bring in, whether that's from or from external places, like, it, I think it's going to show whether they're right back on the path to contention, or it's going to, you know, they're going to bring in the pieces they try and bring and it doesn't work, and then you're going to have a real conversation of where you're at. You know, that's always the risk of when you're trying to find not one, not two, but multiple players, and not to play on your fourth line, but to be major pieces of your team. Like, there's always the risk that they take a really long time to get comfortable in playing here, or it just doesn't work out for whatever situation. Like, that does happen. So again, like, this, I really think, like, this summer, at the end of it, by training camp time, like, that'll be the best indicator of what the next few years are going to look like here.
Yeah, it's one of the biggest off. I know we've spoken about this a lot over the years, but yet again, another edition of the biggest offseason potentially in franchise history. Seems like we've had a lot of these, and that's kind of where you find yourself when you're trying to convince, you know, the most important player in the franchise, Quinn Hughes, would remain here long term. And like Rutherford mentioned, maybe that's an uphill battle anyways, if he has a desire to play with his brothers one day, and maybe that doesn't end up happening in Vancouver. But, you know, as far as Quinn Hughes is concerned, ultimately, I know people are upset and people are afraid and maybe even wonder that they might trade Quinn in here at some point. I think as far as giving it another go, like, I don't think you consider that up until the deadline at the very least, right? Like, you do everything you can this offseason. You see how the season unfolds, and you don't consider that unless you know the answer and you're not competitive at the deadline.
Yeah, you're not looking at that unless someone calls and it is the most outrageous offer, and not only that, but Quinn has already said, I'm not signing here. That's the only way it would happen before that time. Like, they're going to give themselves as much runway as they possibly can, but again, like, I truly do believe that regardless of the decision that Quinn Hughes makes, like, I think he'll do it in the best possible way that he can. Like, that just seems like the person that he is, and like, I do really feel like he would give the Canucks a good enough heads up of, like, hey, this is where I'm at, and I'm just giving, you know, paying you the respect to, you know, so I'm not going to, you know, just walk on you at the end of the year in free agency. So, I mean, I think that he'll be able to do that. I think he'll have his mind made up, you know, by that point, and then they can make the deal or make the decision of what they're going to do and how they're going to handle it, whatever way it shakes out.
Yeah, it's funny, and it's a bit tiresome at times that it circles back around to Elias Pettersson so often. But, you know, as far as like Rick Tocchet is concerned, I know what he said at the end of season availability. But you know, you have to think, you know, him wondering if he could win with Elias Pettersson the way he's been playing and having 45 points this season, if that's something he could see on a long-term deal with a long-term extension with the Vancouver Canucks, especially if Quinn Hughes' future is also up in the air. Like, it always seems to come back around to number 40, Landon. It's if he figures his game out, a lot of these questions get answered for the Vancouver Canucks.
Oh, 100%. And that's the thing, like, right now, and through the summer till next year, they, like, the Canucks can hire whoever they want. Like, yes, they'll, you know, they'll have a bearing on whether, you know, Pettersson gets moving back, you know, the way that he's known that he can. But at the end of the day, like, that's on Pettersson to figure out. It doesn't matter who the coach is. At the end of the day, he can't make a player do anything. Mm-hmm. That player has to not only want to do it, but at the level that he's being paid at and the level of skill and what he's shown in the past, like, it's demanded. Like, they need to have to want and need to put that work in. Like, Quinn Hughes, when he talks about his training and you see him even just talking and moving around the dress morning skating, like, that's a determined person. He doesn't want to go work out. Like, in his mind, you can see, like, he needs to go and get in the gym and put his work in and then get on the ice and do the same, then get into the trainer's room and do the same. Like, that's exactly what Rutherford and Alvin and Tocchet have been talking about. Like, at the end of the day, like, that's the only thing that matters, is what's inside Pettersson, and if he can get that out of himself, it's the only thing that's going to turn it for him. It, again, it doesn't matter who the coach is.
No, ultimately that's right. And, you know, and maybe the silver lining is something fresh and new ushers that along, and that's kind of all you can kind of hope for here. And ultimately it just comes down to being productive. And I think for him, it's not like he hasn't worked hard before. I'm sure you can always work harder, but I hear people saying things like the Canucks gave him a contract without knowing his habits. I think the reason they gave him the contracts is because he had exhibited the right habits up until this past offseason.
Yeah, and what I would say is, like every guy works hard, but there's that little bit, and you said it, it's like, what can you push yourself to? And again, like, these are so, like, such drastic different things, but it was such a major part or point in my career. Like, when we won the Calder Cup, like, winning the American League, that was our 100th game of the season. I'd never played anywhere near that amount before. And I was, in my eyes, and, you know, I think the staff would agree, like, I was playing really good hockey in the 100th game of the season. I never knew I could do that, but I learned what I could push my body to. There's always next levels. And each summer, like, again, I'll go back to Quinn Hughes. Like, Quinn Hughes knows his limit of what his effort is. And then every summer and every season, he kind of finds another stride. Like, there's always that next step. And again, like, that's where the desire comes in. Like, at the end of the day, like, Pettersson's got to have the desire to want to be that type of player.
So I know you've been calling some of these Abbotsford Canucks games here in the playoffs, and we've heard some of them on Sportsnet 650 tonight. Their second round series begins against the Coachella Valley Firebirds in the Palm Desert. But, you know, it was a pretty impressive clinching game, 5-0 win over the Tucson Roadrunners. And what's really been working for this team, and how do they keep this this team game that they've got going into the second round?
Speed and tenacity were the two things that, like, I did games 1 and 3, the two games that they won, and the speed that they played at, especially exiting, like, by the time they were exiting the D zone and gaining the offensive blue line, like, Tucson was chasing them all over the ice. And then every time that there was a turnover, there was an Abbey player right on top of him with another one closing off his angle. Like, you could see the panic in the Tucson players, and it was just the relentlessness. Like, you know, we were talking about Malhotra and his trademarks, like how he played the game with that tenacity and that just a dog on a bone. Like, that's how he has all those Abbey guys playing. And even the ones, you know, the more high skill guys, like, they don't let off pucks. They chase everything down. The amount of penalties that and turnovers that they caused Tucson to take and make in the two games I saw, like, it was staggering just off of the relentlessness. And it was really impressive to watch. But again, like, Victor Mancini, you know, watching him rush the puck in the NHL and see him take off was, you know, really fun to watch. Well, getting to watch him do it 7 times as many that he did in the NHL every game. Like, you can see where his game can get to at the NHL level while he's down there, and the guys are playing really well.
Landon, we appreciate the time as always. Thanks for this.
Yeah, have a good one, guys.
There he is, Landon Ferraro, joining us here on Canucks Central. Abbotsford Canucks, first game of their second round series in the Calder Cup playoffs going tonight. Now, they do have home ice advantage in this, but they chose to start the series away from home, and then games 3, 4, and 5, if necessary, will be back at the Abbotsford Center starting Wednesday, May 7th. But these first two games of the series are in Coachella Valley.
It's actually pretty smart. As long as you win, you got to win at least one of the first two games, right?
Got to get a split in these first two
games. You have to make sure, right? But if you do that, then you set yourself up to stay at home for three games, and the clincher and the game five being at home is pretty big. It's risky,
yeah,
but I kind of like it.
It's kind of fun. Yeah. You know, you heard Landon there talking about Victor Mancini, and had a really nice season for the Vancouver Canucks. I think you saw some of the youth and how he's still raw and still early to the highest level of the game at times towards the end of the season. But, you know, seeing some of the clips and the highlights and hearing what people are saying out of Abbotsford of how he's playing there, I mean, the kid's like too good for the AHL level.
Well, it's one of those.
Or it sounds like he's too good for the AHL level.
It's one of those things we saw it with, and I'm not comparing him to Brännström, but you saw Brännström when he went down, he looked like a different player.
Yeah.
Like he was dominant, right? Like just completely dominant player at that level.
He played like a fourth forward when he was in Abbotsford earlier this year, though.
But it was insane. Like he was doing Quinn Hughes. He looked like Quinn Hughes at the AHL level. That's the stuff he was doing, dummying guys, skating guys into corners and just like, you know, making them, you know, bail out. But it's harder to do that in the NHL, right? And Mancini, one thing that's very evident is he's got really good traits. He skates well. He's got nice puck skills. He can make things happen. He's good on his edges as well, right? So when he uses that to his advantage, he can look very imposing. Mm-hmm. And it's you can see him really exhibit those things at the AHL level. Ultimately, it comes down to processing at the NHL level and just understanding how to defend and do the right things. There are times when he just ends up not having the right technique in battles and not being in the right spot and just not making the right read. But that comes with time. And considering how young he still is, a fifth round pick from a few years ago, like I'm just not sure we're going to see him play as much as people expect this year. But 2 years from now, he can be a really nice player potentially.
Artur Shelobs has been the goaltender for Abbotsford. We'll see what happens tonight when they begin their series with Coachella Valley in the Palm Desert. Probably a great place. Like if you're like an AHL lifer, wouldn't be the worst place to play. Like Coachella Valley?
Palm Springs.
Like, man,
would you not want to play in Palm Springs?
Palm Springs. You're there for extended periods of time, right?
Because what if you get called up to Seattle and you're like,
I go to Seattle.
It's raining.
Man.
It's December in Seattle. It's going to be gray the whole time.
It's like
the paycheck makes up for it usually.
There's some tough AHL cities, but like San Diego, Palm Desert, probably not the worst places to play.
Abbotsford?
To play AHL hockey.
I mean,
Abbotsford's not bad.
Honestly, the worst part about Abbotsford is just the traffic to and from Vancouver. That's it.
And also that it's not Chilliwack.
Well, for you, yes.
Rivalry.
Yeah, for you. That's the biggest. Like, Abbotsford's nice. I mean, it's not, you know, driving an hour to get there is not that bad. But if there's traffic, it can take ages.
It could take a lot longer.
The problem is the traffic, right? Like, outside of that, you know, an hour drive's not that bad, or like 50 minutes or whatever if there isn't any traffic.
Happening now in the Stanley Cup playoffs, Brady Tkachuk has scored for the Senators, so it is 2-1 for the Maple Leafs in that game. We're going to let you listen in on some of the Leafs and Senators end of second period action coming up in a moment. Golden Knights and Minnesota Wild are tied up at one apiece. Ryan Hartman scoring for the Wild. This one was not called off like it was in game 5 of that series. More to come. It is Canuck Central on Sportsnet 650.